Everyone has a story. How they got here, where they met along the way, the choices they made, the dreams they are chasing. Welcome to Anthologies of Hope. Welcome back to Anthologies of Hope for episode number 10, our final regular episode of season one. I'm your host, Rick Osowski, and as always, I'm not a mental health professional, but simply a mental health advocate with a passion for storytelling. Thank you so much for joining us this season, and I hope if you've missed any episodes along the way that you'll go back and check them out in our interim. Each episode in season one holds a special place in my heart, along with this week's episode even more so. While we're coming to the end of season one with our traditional episode format, don't forget to check back next week as we will have a bonus episode, episode number 11. This will be our first ever episode recorded live from the Conversations Cafe event at Sip of Hope Coffee Bar in Chicago on December 19th. The topic of that event was all in the family, and there's some great discussion with mental health experts and advocates in regards to mental health in both the formal and casual sense of family. Also, as we mentioned last week, we'll be taking a few weeks off after next week's bonus episode to prep our season two episodes, and then we'll be back in time for spring with a whole slate of interviews looking to be around 10 to 12 interviews similar to season one. Also, some additional pretty exciting news is that we'll also be having additional bonus content coming throughout season two directly from more conversation cafes, as these monthly events will be recorded live at Sip of Hope, and we'll be bringing them to you as quickly as we can as soon as they happen. And if you're a local Chicago listener, be sure to check them out whenever they are posted, usually on the Sip of Hope or Hope for the Day Facebook pages, where you can search for Conversation Cafe on Eventbrite. Now, as I mentioned, closing out the interview for Season 1, we're still connecting with some of the extended HeartCamp family across the five sessions that were run in 2018, between Florida, Los Angeles, and Nashville. If you're not familiar with HeartCamp, we dive deep into the ins and outs of it in our first two episodes, so be sure to check those out. Additionally, the first two seasons of our podcast will cover the conversations with members of the HeartCamp family exclusively before we start bringing in folks from the general mental health community. As a quick refresher, HeartCamp is the brainchild of Jamie Torkowski and a two-day workshop focusing on authenticity, writing, bringing your heart to work, and mental health. For more info on HeartCamp, including upcoming dates like February 2019 in Melbourne, Florida, you can check out heartcampwithjamie.com for details. The idiom, save the best for last, doesn't really ever hold up for me, but it sure did for this week's episode. I'm super excited to have Candace Carpenter joining us this week, and I hope you'll see why. As you'll hear throughout our conversation, Candace and I are on the same page with a lot of our outlook on life, daily practices, and personal goals, while having some pretty different personal journeys along the way to get here. Similar to many of other guests this season, Candace is a very prolific and talented writer. She blogs on all things geeks, comics, movies, and pop culture at WeGeekGirls.com, as well as a personal lifestyle, travel, and awesome tea blog at OnWanderWoodLane.com. That's Wander with an A. We cover some of Candace's journey to find what works for her with regard to her mental health, her perspective on approaching life as a series of integrative practices, and really striving to be your own whole holistic self. I'm extremely proud to call Candace a close and personal friend, and I'm constantly in awe of the home run she's hitting every day. As I said before, I hope you enjoy this conversation as much as I did. Again, we're putting together a playlist available at anthologiesofhope.com/playlist that hosts and guests of each episode can contribute meaningful songs to. Candace has some excellent throwback choices for her song selections this week, going all the way back to the year 2000 with a couple Sister Hazel songs. One of the themes throughout the conversation we had was the permission that we need to give ourselves to just feel. As these songs do just that for Candace, my selection this week has been my connection to feelings since I heard it this past fall. The song, Maybe It's Time, from the recent A Star Is Born soundtrack, hits me right in the stomach every time I hear it and stops me right in my tracks. This is most definitely my go-to song when I need to recenter myself and give myself permission to feel. Each week, we'd like to remind you that if you're in a time of crisis, we'll be covering a range of potentially difficult topics. Please use this as a warning to seek help and to come back to listen once you're in a more positive season. If you are in need of help, an abundance of international resources can be found on the Find Help pages from To Write Love on Our Arms and Hope for the Day. To Write Love on Our Arms can be found at twloha.com/find-help, and Hope for the Day can be found at hftd.org/find-help. As always, you can find us at anthologiesofhope.com, on Facebook and Instagram as Anthologies of Hope, on Twitter as AnthologiesPod, or email us directly with any questions, comments, or issues that you may have at anthologiesofhope, all one word, no punctuation, at gmail.com. Please like, subscribe, and rate us on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Overcast, and Google Podcasts. Anywhere else you may want to find us, please let us know. And so with that, we bring you the final regular episode of the first season of Anthologies of Hope. I've said it several times that each episode is my favorite episode, but this one is just so super special to me, and I hope you find the same. Anthologies of Hope, Episode 10, Candace Carpenter.
Hello, everybody. My name is Candace. I live in North Carolina, and I'm a massage therapist. And I was in the OG Heart Camp group.
Based on backgrounds we'll get into, this is one of the conversations I was more, I've been most excited to jump into and record and interviews and everything. Aww. Based on a lot of our both hobbies, interests, mindsets tend to overlap.
For sure.
Having some of the same, I guess, nostalgic taste in music as well, mm-hmm. being geeks as well, you graciously publishing a blog post that I had from Comic-Con on your geek blog and some of the stuff there. So, I mean, we've shared a lot in context there. Yeah. And then our mutual friend Jenny from the First Heart Camp calls you Miss Candance. It was definitely you were brought up in Jenny's recording. So looking forward to this one.
Good grief. Thanks.
But I mean, jumping in, there's from, like I had mentioned, having a more nostalgic taste in music ends up coming from being maybe a little bit closer in age. So it's a little bit different in, I would say, perspective than most of the other folks we've talked to so far who may have skewed a little bit younger.
Okay.
So this is something where it seems like you, in the context of your overall journey and kind of where that puts you in, where Heart Camp fits in, you had kind of started a lot before that, or started a lot of your more general holistic, for lack of a better word, practice prior to the Heart Camp with some of your career where you said you're a massage therapist. And then there's a couple other areas that you work on. So why don't you just give a quick rundown as far as, you know, what your background is, what brought you to the area, and kind of what you have used from a holistic standpoint to work with mental health in your life and stuff like that.
Okay, awesome. I spent a lot of my 20s in a fog. And I went to school a couple of different times for a couple of different things that are still interests of mine, but I was independent and never really had a good job. So my finances were always all over the place. So the follow through just wasn't able to be there. And when I found massage therapy, it was the first thing that kind of brought me out of that fog. I didn't know that it was energetic exchanges at the time. Mm-hmm. I got into that later, but it definitely opened up a more clear spiritual path. So I just kept paying attention to how I felt more than anything else. And different places that I worked, I would meet, you know, people, and I met a guy, a chiropractor, who is actually who I work alongside of now, 8 years later. That it was actually his mother started a therapy called Nexlin. I guess I should back up for a second and say that I haven't historically done very well with prescriptions. I have taken a couple of things in my 20s. I tried Christian counseling because that's my faith background.
Background or upbringing.
And yeah, background upbringing. It's morphed a little bit. I don't really know. I wouldn't put a label to my walk right now, but it was definitely what I thought. Well, not what I thought, but what people around me thought I needed at the time. And there were various prescriptions prescribed back then. And I don't do well. I become somebody that uses anger in a very bad way. not anything physically, you know, no, I don't outlast. I don't,
lash
I
out.
Wouldn't out. Lash out physically, but it would be very not my heart, put it that way. It was something that I didn't recognize. And that happened not just with you know, antidepressants, but it happened with other prescriptions as well, which might be TMI. You can cut this out, but I can't take birth control and anything that has to do with hormones. It turns me into like a raging bitch.
Okay.
And that's not who I am. So.
Well, and obviously using something like that to try to get you either, you know, back to center or stable or something, for lack of better terms, like those are things that really don't compute. So it's not something that is, you know, the normal kind of science way of looking at it. We're here, like, throw some of this at it and then that'll help you stabilize. So obviously you're in that negative side effect reaction to that.
And right.
It's just going to pile on.
One of the things I realized, or I have realized about myself, is I have to feel, and I understand people that don't want to handle those the deep and the heavy and the light aspects of everything, but I have to. It's the way I process everything. So I think the disassociation that that medications caused me, mm-hmm. As well as traditional therapy, it was very traumatic for me to go to people that wanted me to talk about specific instances. It was almost like going through it all over again. Mm-hmm. So what has helped me the most has been the Nexplanon therapy, which you can look up online. It's FDA approved, but it's non-medicinal. It works on a brainwave mm-hmm. frequency.
Yeah.
And the caveat that I have is there's a lady with it who's very intuitive. And this comes into energy, which I'll probably talk a lot about in my answers, because I've found it very real and very magical and very purposeful in my healing process. But she's able to pick up not necessarily visions, but she just kind of sees things differently in a more energetic and spiritual aspect. So she's been able to help me get to know myself better, and in a completely non-traumatic way. And I think it would be akin to a prescription. I started going every week for about 6 months, and for probably the last 2.5 years, I've been going every 2 weeks. So you could almost consider it a prescription at that point, I think. But it started off with a lot of releasing and a lot of revisiting things and a lot of unlocking memories that I had repressed. Mm-hmm. But it's just a gentle process, not to say there's not emotion involved, but it helps. It's a healing emotional exchange, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. There's no, you don't go away feeling better. I mean, worse for a little bit and then better. Like, you immediately go, okay, so I'm able to, and you've been a witness to this, I'm able to talk about things that historically I either couldn't talk about or couldn't talk about without it showing any emotion, mm-hmm. or very heavy emotion. And not to say I don't cry, because you know I do cry, but it's helpful for me to be able to talk about it and not feel anger or hurt or resentment or bitterness. Or this process that I've been through has helped me not let go of it in a way that people, you know, don't pay for their consequences or whatever, but you don't have to worry about that. Like, it's just, your healing is about you.
Yeah. And a positive energy release.
Yeah. It's about you, 100% about you. And you don't have to worry about, selfishly, you don't have to worry about if it helps anybody else or if they're okay. And it's definitely helped me. I wouldn't say I'm a new person, but I'm the best version of me. Okay. And yeah.
That makes 100% sense. So is that something where, I mean, you had mentioned that you knew somebody that had it. So was that something that you got turned on to by word of mouth, or is that a kind of a last straw based off of your body kind of rejecting these other medicines, or how did you end up upon it?
I hadn't tried prescriptions or therapy. I heavily relied on my faith and prayer, and it wasn't cutting the mustard. Not to offer offense of any kind, mm-hmm. but it wasn't it was helpful, but not a solving of anything, if that makes any sense. So I was probably 3 years into my massage career, and it wasn't as lucrative as it could have been, but it was good. I was building my practice. I had moved back in with my parents for a little bit just to ease some financial strain. And I just found myself dreading every day and not really being able to explain why, because most people think you need a catalyst to have a bad day, and that's not true.
Yeah, you can wake up and go,
yeah, you can just wake up and go, like, I don't know, nothing caused this. And I definitely, my biggest frustration probably in the last 5 years has been I've progressively improved my life. So to find myself in a place of really low, well, just in a really low place, it was confusing as crap to me. And at that time, it manifested in staying up really, really late. And I didn't have any motivation unless I had work to do. So being that I was in transition with one of my work locations, I was starting all the way over with clientele. So there wasn't a lot of work there to do. So my mom just, she was the one that noticed, and she just started a conversation with me, and she's like, you know, I just want to know if I should be worried about you because you just seem to lack motivation. And I mean, that kind of hurt my feelings, but she didn't know any other way to word it. I was staying up really late, and even though I wasn't keeping anybody awake, I think she probably knew. And something triggered me in that, in my response, and I just started crying uncontrollably. And she just looked at me and she's like, what's wrong? What's going on? Again, you know, thinking that there was a catalyst, like somebody hurt my feelings or something was going on that I was just keeping to myself. And I just looked at her and I said, I have the most overwhelming dread about every single day of my life, and I don't know why. And I don't know if I said the words, I don't want to live. I don't remember saying them, but whatever came out of my mouth next was a catalyst for her to say, look, there's a lady named Pam at the office now. She's got something called Nexlin. We are going to go get you some help. And she did it. I mean, I don't know if it was the very next minute, but the very next day I was, and at that point, I just wanted to feel better.
Yeah.
I just wanted to understand why I had a good life and didn't want to live it or didn't want to face it. And I don't know. I don't even know if it was about life at that point. It was just, there was just so much dread. It was a heavy, heavy dread. So yeah, I knew about it. At the first time I heard about Nexlin, Pam actually wasn't involved with it. It was the machine by itself, which is all you'll hear about if you Google it, is okay. The machine, because she had the therapy herself, and it awakened her to her gift of energy coaching or whatever. That's the closest thing I can think of to call it, to label it, is energy coaching.
Okay.
She's definitely a big piece to that puzzle.
Now, has that pretty much been the entire treatment that you've had for since that conversation with your mom? Has that pretty much been, along with some of the other work you've been doing that we'll get into, but there wasn't any, since that time, you haven't had any other, I guess you could say, traditional mental health counseling or anything like that? It's basically been just, this is your main piece?
Yes. I didn't have anything traditional, or haven't in the last 3.5 years. I don't know. Once I found it, it definitely took a few weeks for me to, that first week I went every day, as a matter of fact, but it took a few weeks to really feel change. And then it was a massive change, and it, you know, we'll probably get into the ways later, so I won't go into that now, but I didn't feel the need for anything additional.
I was going to say, it's interesting, the symptoms that you described, have related, or at least mentally have recalled for me, some of a number of stories I've read from professional athletes who, with those very same symptoms, and again, not to misdiagnose or cross-diagnose or do anything,
sure,
but were diagnosed with severe obsessive compulsive disorder, where that's not the extent of, oh, I just have to touch the doorknob three times before I walk out of the house, or like I have to have an even number of spoons on the table or something like that. That's more of the traditional thought of obsessive compulsive disorder.
Mm-hmm.
But there was one goalie, Corey Hirsch, who wrote a article for the Players Tribune during one of the months that was Mental Health Month. And so between all these months and national holidays or national days and awareness weeks, I forget when during the year it was.
Right.
And which one it was for. I believe it was over the summer that he wrote it, or they republished it, because I believe he wrote it a couple of years ago. But he was, you know, a Stanley Cup level goalie, had everything in the world, sports cars, all this stuff, but he would just get locked in on one thing that was like a catastrophe that could happen, and then he could not stop thinking about what if that happened, and then he got locked in and it became dread and just overbuilding stuff. And so eventually he ended up going through a team sponsored psychologist and then got treatment that way. But then there were other players that had very similar symptoms that have had alternative therapies too. So it's just as understanding, you know, this worked for you and you had the ability to kind of have that inflection point where, you know, somebody cares enough to bring it up, and then you're able to understand that, yeah, this isn't right. And then you did something, you went to it. It didn't, like you said, it wasn't a complete wave washing over you and solving everything right away, but you stuck with it for the first week, and then you started, you know, feeling some more and coming back to it. And then now you know that works for you. So you're able to stick with it. So just a little bit of interesting background there.
Yeah. I will tell you that I feel like words, almost my whole life, words were thrown out, but I never really knew what they were.
Mm-hmm.
If you had caught me pre therapy, I wouldn't have said I have anxiety. Depression is easier, or was easier for me to admit to, but anxiety, the most pivotal thing about the therapy is being able to identify my anxiety, and the most beneficial thing since has been able to explain it to people, especially my mom, because she had a very limited understanding of what I was going through. And through this process, I mean, there are moments to this day where all I have to do is look at her and say, I'm anxious. And she knows that that entails a laundry list mm-hmm. of things, not just one thing.
Yeah.
And I think that was the biggest thing. Regardless of what I let go of, it helped me identify things that I couldn't identify before. I just knew I felt a way that made me feel not happy, not good, not even sane, if I can use the word sane. Mm-hmm. It made me feel like, I don't know, I didn't recognize myself.
Well, no, I mean, and absolutely everything is, you're internalizing everything, and then you don't recognize the person you are, but it's the person that you're looking at in the mirror type thing. And it's not the person you want to be. And it feels like you're fighting yourself and all of this stuff. Mm-hmm. So being able to, I mean, establish that toolbox and that toolbox of communication so that you're able to, again, one of the kind of the themes of this podcast is talking helps, you know, having the conversation helps. So being able to use or put into words, not even the exact feelings that you have, but just that you're feeling off, or that you don't feel mm-hmm. this way, or that you want to feel this way, and being able to use that and then now communicate that when you're in times of nearing crisis, where you're mm-hmm. kind of riding that wave and it's going to crest, and there's somebody there that you can work with to kind of talk yourself down from, or they know how to take over and do some of that for you. So being able to go through that and identify that, again, isn't some sort of fallibility or anything, or, you know, it's no character flaw or anything like that. I mean, that's the strength there. That's the work you're doing, where you know how things affect you And then just like, you know, if you can't run a mile in under 10 minutes or whatever, you go to the gym and, you know, start running. Whereas this is you doing that mental work to know that when things happen, I need to communicate, use my tools and stuff like that. So that goes a long way.
It does. Absolutely.
The biggest thing that you said so far that, I mean, if anything would be the underlying story out of all of my side of these conversations, would be, I have to feel. And so that was an amazing tagline there, because it's something where, I mean, we saw A Star Is Born on Saturday, but I don't know if you've seen that yet.
Not yet.
But it was amazing. I knew there was some heavy stuff in it. I didn't know how it happened, but there's just one song, and I'm usually not a huge fan of kind of like original music movie soundtracks type thing, because they seem like hokey and more contrived and stuff. But this was between Bradley Cooper and Lady Gaga. Knowing my musical taste, you wouldn't think I'm a big Lady Gaga fan, but I guess that's an exclusive here. I'm actually a pretty decent Gaga fan, so I was interested to see how she turned out in there. But there's one song on there where plays it kind of early on in the movie, actually really early on in the movie when they first meet. And I don't know if they play it again in the movie or not, but it's one where, for whatever reason, it just, I keep playing it over and over and over again. And it's, I don't know what I'm feeling yet, but it makes me feel. And so it brings everything, whatever, to the surface. And so like now, like I'm listening to it like on headphones, on work calls, I have it on in the background, just the soundtrack playing, you know, like when I'm walking around with it on like a Bluetooth speaker and stuff like that. So it is something where, again, I don't know what that is entirely that's kind of bubbling to the surface, but that is something where it's just pulling that out. And that's part of like that music and that energy transfer where it's just whatever it is just bringing it to the surface.
Yeah. I think we're kindred spirits in the way music moves us, for sure. And it can be a weird song.
Yeah.
It can be a weird song that takes you there, but being willing to let the universe use whatever method speaks to you is powerful. So I make people laugh a lot with when I say things speak to me. Like, obviously they don't audibly speak to me, but there is a, like you said, a resonance and an echo if you're willing to tap into it. And I get that with music every day. So
I mean, why don't we jump in there where, I mean, you said we'll touch on that in a bit, where as far as the energy transfer and a lot of that, where that's probably something also in conversation where people end up, you make people laugh because of that. But then when you break it down and start talking about it more, then, you know, I'm sure that more people come up with a realization after the conversation or kind of end up walking away of the same mindset. So this is something that we've had some time to talk about over the last 10 or 11 months, but the more, again, that we talk about it, it's something I find I'm very much of the same mindset. I may not be a practitioner like yourself, but it's something where I'm right there on the bandwagon, and probably more so than anything else, as far as I guess you could say the universality of it is kind of what I'm on board for. So what's a little bit of the background there?
So everything lives and moves off of energy. I would say breathe, but not everything breathes. But there's a vibration to everything, like everything, even inanimate objects have a vibration. And we're all meant to be intuitive people, but we arrive at it when we arrive at it, which is the circle of life. I mean, everything discovers itself, and we could get really sciencey about it. And there is science behind it. It is science. You would laugh at me, knowing in many conversations as we've had about this, I was supposed to study something called Reiki when I was in massage school. And because of my such a fundamental religious background, anything that took away from God, the church, in words, forget feeling, but anything that took away from that in words, I shied away from.
For the dogmatic power of
right. That. Even though now I recognize it as the same thing, then I was like, oh God, I'm going to get up here and study this and then roll my eyes the whole time I'm talking about it. But I read the story of this guy who discovered it and God showed it to him. So right away, my little, you know, chip on my shoulder was kind of busted mm-hmm. because we were created. However it happened, we were here, and everything, like I said before, gives off like a energetic frequency. And it didn't take me long to realize as a practitioner that I was sensitive to it. People call it a lot of different things, but I would recognize what was wrong with somebody before they spoke about it. Pretty quickly, I realized that I was meant to help on a deeper level than just musculature. Mm-hmm. So when people talk to me about what kind of work I do, you know, people can get pretty lofty about whatever job they have. And people in my industry do talk a lot about what they can do for you on the physical plane. And I don't get boasty about what I can help people through on the energetic plane. I just, there's a tugging in like in a deeper place than, you know, my gut. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know, I tend to go wherever people need the work, even though they don't know that they need the work. And we learned a phrase in our heart camp, or I learned it. Maybe other people knew it already, but there was a phrase said in our first heart camp group, just lean in. And that's the best thing I can tell you, is that I used to kind of shy away from my intuition because I was afraid of it. And progressively through this awakening that the therapies brought me to, I lean into it more, and it just makes you recognize it all more. So I used to joke 10 years ago that things spoke to me because I would go back to, you know, this picture or this piece of clothing or this food. Like, you would joke about things like that. But I think the more aware you are and the more you slough off some of the stuff that makes you unaware, the more you can recognize what's calling to you, and everything does. Did that make any sense?
No, absolutely. it's something okay. where I definitely agree there, where the level of receptiveness, perceptiveness there. I mean, it almost is kind of the, both being geeks and into fantasy and some other stuff of almost, you know, just being in a typical or stereotypical empath type role for a lot of the more fictional type characters, where again, you're able to feel more, sense more from someone than even if they're not there or, you know, sitting physically right in front of you, or it's, you know, it's something where you're able to help bring somebody to somewhere they needed to be emotionally. Sure. or something based off of, you know, the guidance that they need. So there is something there where there is a direct non-observable or non-visually observable kind of transference of energy there.
Yep.
And for me, it ends up being something where you can end up putting the positive energy out there, and that makes you a little bit more receptive and a little bit more in tune with what else is out there. Or, mm-hmm. you know, if it ends up being a case where you're putting out negative energy, that kind of shuts it down and kind of mm-hmm. pulls you back in and mm-hmm. makes it a little bit less easier to kind of fit in or go along. So that's in some of the conversations we have, that's where I often find myself in those situations where it's kind of an inflection point of, how is this interaction going to go? How is that going to affect right. the rest of my day? How can I then affect, you know, a domino chain based on my interaction here, the energy I'm putting out. And then now, is that positive energy going on to this person or negative energy that,
right.
that is now then that person is receiving that one way or another. Mm-hmm. And then where are they taking that next and stuff like that. So kind of
yeah.
a lot of that transference of energy is something I work on, I would say pretty much daily. And something where I know if I'm spiraling negatively, I can see how all of my interactions are basically kind of stepping up based off of the negative energy, and try to, you know, reset myself, reset my brain, and then try to see, like, again, where I'm going and what I want to achieve, and then try to incrementally step that back down with the positive energy.
Yeah, it's so important that you brought that up, because it happens either way. it happens with positive and it happens with negative. Like you can't think mm-hmm. that there's not going to be a negative exchange. Since you touched on the geek thing, I like to think of it as, you know, that moment in The Force Awakens when Kylo Ren basically has a temper tantrum mm-hmm. and ruins his lair.
Yep.
It reminds me, that's what I think of. It's like every morning you have the potential to stub your toe and either go, oh shit, that hurt, or go, oh, and just completely ruin everything. And that's what happens. Like you can either go, man, I stubbed my toe, I can see how this day is going to go. Or you can go, oh, that sucked, but I'm not going to let it. I get on people's nerves a lot now because I've learned the power of what you just said. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying I've got it perfected at all. I'm not perfect at all in that script, but I know I can change it. And most of the time, that awareness that you were talking about of what is that next person going to take that as, like you can tell when you look at somebody's face that and how they respond to you, where you're at. Mm-hmm. And if you're not if you're paying attention and don't care, then you've just rolled that, let's say, dung pile, not a snowball, whatever. it's pretty messy.
Yeah.
Because I've also been in those places too. It's like, man, I'm in a pissy mood. Oh, well. But for me personally, it took, and I hate to say it because I'm very, very blessed to have a good relationship with my mom, but it took, and this was all pre-Nexlin as well, but it took watching her face fall enough at my attitude mm-hmm. and outlook to notice that something needed to change. So I'm really quick to pay attention to that. Doesn't mean everybody's going to pay attention when interacting with you. And that's also something to understand. But I just think being willing to, like you said, like you got to lean into the empathy and realize that even if somebody's coming at you with less than their best, that you've got the opportunity to do something special with that if you choose to.
And I think obviously this episode won't be going up anytime soon within, you know, the next 5 hours or anything like that. But on the eve of election night, I think there's, as we're recording this, but the lean into the empathy is really, you know, a universal statement that could be made just across the board. So that's something where, again, I think most of the people, or I would hazard to guess that most of the people that we'll have on here, most of their stories would almost, you know, 100% align with that statement or that sentiment. It's very interesting. And so a little bit of a anecdote for just the, you can't avoid those interactions. Mm-hmm. Thursday night, Amanda and I went to Sip of Hope. They had a Conversations Cafe that is going to begin a monthly night of conversation and sharing and community built around mental health and both professionals and folks in the community and things like that. And one of the guys there was a alderman from one of the suburbs of Chicago, but he's not a mental health professional by any means, but he lost a friend to suicide and he decided to be active as both an alderman and someone who was now brought into the mental health space to use kind of some of what he had to be able to do that. So he started a national suicide awareness kind mm-hmm. of campaign from the official local government level. So he's got a number of county, states, and city governments working with him on this campaign. But he said, like, if you want to do one thing a day, it's just wave at everybody you see. Just wave at everybody. And you cannot have a shitty day after that. It's just like, if you, some days you'll look like, you know, a serial killer from one of the best, you know, movies or whatever. You may look wacky, but it ends up being a case where if you just wave at everybody you see, it's going to be contagious. Your day is going to get better. And then now, you know, those people will end up having, instead of everybody either looking at their phones or just saying, you know, get the hell out of the way or something like that, it turns a lot of perspectives around. So mm-hmm. having that be a case where you can just wave and smile at somebody, it goes a long way. So that was something where, as soon as he said that, I thought of you and kind of this upcoming conversation, where again, it's a mindset. It takes effort, but then it also is something where it's, you know, contributing to the whole and connecting to the whole, but also still leaning into wanting to contribute and utilize that empathy.
Right. And the thing about the wave or the smile, it's usually a smile in my case. It used to bother me when it didn't get reciprocated, but now it's like, it's about what you take into a mm-hmm. situation, and it's never going to come up void. Like if you, everything about intention, like intention is the biggest thing.
Is the key. Absolutely.
Is the key. And so if your intention is to go, and it makes a difference, man. I can't tell you how many times I used to walk with my head down going, man, if I don't want to make eye contact with anybody. Like, what kind of life is that? But I walk up the hill to the Harris Teeter for lunch quite often. And, you know, smiles don't always get returned, but the ones that do, I mean, what if that's the only time they smiled mm-hmm. that day? I mean, like, that's the kind of stuff I think about it. It's not even about who doesn't return the smile most of the time. It's about who does. And it does feel really good to get it back. But I don't know, that's just a good example. Like if you're operating your life out of the best and highest intention, it's not going to come up void. I don't mean easy by any stretch of the imagination, but it just can't. It can't come up void when that intention is in the right place.
Yeah, exactly. And when the intention is true and authentic, it's not going to, like, it's a 9 times out of 10 thing. Like you're going to find what you need. You're going to get that response back that you need. As long as that intention is true and authentic to what you're
absolutely
going for, it's going to be there. So I think that's a great kind of pivot point to Heart Camp then, because one of the key points of Heart Camp is, you know, bringing your heart to work, living with it, authenticity, using your voice and the authentic voice and some of that. So how did you end up hearing about Heart Camp, and then what made you dive in right away?
I have been following To Write Love, not ever since the beginning, but
close enough.
10 out of 11 years, or 11 out of 12, because I think we're coming up on 12. You'll have to correct me. I found them really early on, and I've always followed them. Sometimes they were a little more on the radar than others, but just within the last 5 years, especially the last 3.5, I've always really connected to the message, and I don't even think I had identified why until, you know, my therapy. My suicidal thoughts were not something I shared with any single person ever. Mm-hmm. I just never told anybody. So, you know, nobody knew why it was a call of close to my heart.
Yep.
Or why, you know, it just was. Anyway, so obviously, you know, Jamie was on my radar, and I was able to go to Heavy and Light 2 years ago and met him. I got the first copy of If You Feel Too Much, which you know, we both love that book mm-hmm. a lot. And I got the, you know, the revised edition with the extra chapters in it. And I let myself actively read in that book, which I'm not sure will make him happy or not. But I just found myself underlining so much and really resonating with, I felt like somebody finally understood me. Mm-hmm. I have a lot of supportive people. I have a lot of people that love me, but this was like, oh, this is the way you feel in this situation. That's the way you feel in that situation. This is the lesson you learned. Like, there was just a lot of echoing of my own life.
Absolutely.
So I was paying a lot of attention to him. So after Heavy and Light, I just wanted to be more involved with the organization. And this is something else we have in common. As soon as they announced the Blue campaign, I said, okay, this is how I'm going to get more involved. And so I did the blue campaign, and then I did the suicide prevention, the stay campaign with, for the suicide prevention. And I just, my heart, like I was pretty proud of my heart, but I just noticed it changing. And the bottom line is people continue to keep mattering. Mm-hmm. Like there's not a cap on the amount that people can matter. And it, I just started getting a more, a wider perspective. It wasn't just me caring about the people in my periphery. It was about me caring about just people as a whole. And so I was paying attention one day when Jamie was on his social media saying, I really want to get a group, an intimate group of people together. What would you guys want to talk about? And I watched the responses to it. And I'm like, whatever this turns out to be, I want in on it. Mm-hmm. Like whatever this looks like, I want in on it, because people's responses, like, oh my God, there's a colossal amount of people that are unselfish in this world, you know? And it was, they were just blowing me away with what they wanted to bring up. So I guess you could say I was just sitting on the go button.
Yeah.
And the minute he said, this is what I'm doing, I didn't think twice. I was like, there, what do I need to do? How do I need to do it? Yeah.
And that ends up being the case for, I would say, probably 50% of the people, where it's like, yeah, just sign me up. Let's go for it. Let's just jump in. There's a handful of people where, I mean, they're, without even knowing what essentially the Heart Camp factor was, but it was, you know, it was the next step Jamie was taking. They believed in Torite Love. They believed in Jamie, his words, if you feel too much. And so that made a lot of sense there. But kind of that story and the journey so far seemed to, has definitely jived with everyone. And the notion that you're able to now, once you're there, find 40 other people that are, you know, are feeling too much, that need to feel, that are, even if they don't know it, they're leaning into that empathy just by being mm-hmm. there. And whether they want to, you know, find out what other people in the room are using to kind of fix their own problems versus everything elsewhere. In one of the other conversations we've had on the podcast, I mentioned, it seems like with everyone in the room, everyone there is bringing their own problems, but then realizing that everyone else is dealing with their own problems in a similar way, or like mm-hmm. we kind of negatively label ourselves by our problems, but we don't think anybody else could possibly have the same problem.
Right.
And then so seeing people there in there where now somebody with a certain problem is helping somebody out with a different problem. And then it just goes in a circular fashion, and it ends up being, it's not necessarily, you know, group therapy by any means, but it's something where it's, again, folks coming together with intentionality that want to, you know, live more authentic, that want to know mm-hmm. what their voice is, that want to find that out and figure that out. And through one of Torite Love's earliest tenets, where love is the movement, through everything we've talked about so far, like that, again, it's the same thing, just in a different language type thing. Like it's, mm-hmm. we're saying the same thing over and over again. So whether, you know, you're leaning into that empathy, or whether you're calling it love is the movement, or whether you're calling it that energy transfer, like all of that mm-hmm. ends up coming back to the same thing. So finding Absolutely. Folks that are, you know, of that same mindset is paramount, and being able to mm-hmm. embrace that and stay with it is amazing.
Yeah. And I just wanted to echo something you said, or add to it, but you said it's not therapy by any means, but it is therapeutic. Mm-hmm. I think those are definitely two different things.
Yep.
There's a lot, that word can be used a lot more than it is, in my opinion, therapeutic.
Absolutely.
Because there's so much healing that can happen, and you don't have to have, like, you can just be who you are and be healing to somebody. And it doesn't require any kind of degree or special training, thank God.
Exactly. And so kind of going back to some of the sim conversations from the Conversation Cafe, that's where it was kind of intimated, or some of the discussion was built around, you know, just having that conversation is a start where, again, you don't need to be a mental health professional to be in the space, to be able to help and to do that. Sometimes it just takes as simple as, and going as remembering as verbatim as possible. Sometimes you just have to open the hole in the front of your face to be able to help somebody.
Yes.
And so, that does go a long way. And so putting, you know, that 40 plus people in the same space and being able to do that and have folks across the entire personality spectrum come together and kind of, and see where they're at and what they need and want to get the similar tools or, you know, advance some of their usage of the similar tools goes a long way there.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
So let's go into some of the, second set of questions there. So based on everything we've talked about so far, there's a lot of, I would say, implicit reference to self-care that mm-hmm. we've made so far. So why don't you, and this is a very tantamount topic throughout HeartCamp and some of the discussions there, but what are some of your favorite forms of self-care and what have you found or kind of what's been your journey since HeartCamp to dive deeper to make sure you end up having that self-care?
I, outside of the therapy I've already talked about, connection's really important for me. I know a lot of people personally, they get recharged in, you know, solace. And it's become clear to me that while I'm working on being better at being by myself, I can't ignore the fact that people give me life mm-hmm. and people are therapeutic for me. I have to be careful with it because I can overextend myself and that's not self-care at all. But one of the most fun things about this journey is you say, I said the words, it changed my life. And then you think you get used to it and that it's over. And then you talk to people. I was at a party, an early Halloween party about a month ago. And a guy that I usually see in the con, you know, circuit. So what are we talking about the whole time? Geek stuff, mm-hmm. right? So I don't know a lot about him. He doesn't know a lot about me. We were sitting on this back terrace and he says, so I got to ask you about something because I've just noticed a difference. And he legit asked me about HeartCamp. He said, it seems like something big's going on in your life. And to me, so much has happened, but my day to day is still the same. I'm still running a business. I'm still working my tail off. Like some of the day to day has not changed, but I am fundamentally different. And that's been the most fun thing. So finding a balance, I guess, to get back to your question, a balance between connection and when I need a break. And funny enough, you know, quiet is not really a break for me either. When I meditate or whatever I'm doing, there's usually some loud music playing. It's usually not tranquil music because I work in tranquil music every day and I get tired of it. Mm-hmm. So it's usually bands that hit me, you know, again in the soul. And you will appreciate this, but it's usually something a little harder hitting or a little moving or makes me move. And one of the self-care things that I do, which is probably going to make you laugh, but I like to do solo dance parties. I can almost immediately get myself out of any kind of funk by just letting myself move, my body move. I go on a different plane of existence, you know, and I know what it takes to get me there. It's not every song I listen to. It's, you know, a particular set of music. Sometimes it changes, but most of the time it's the same set. This is something you already know also, but your wife got me back onto these, but essential oils really helped me. Mm-hmm. And so that's something she and I share together with our emotional support. So I use them daily. I diffuse them daily. They're always with me. What particular oil depends on the day. But as you mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, it's only by experience that I moved into a more holistic way of doing things. And I think massage therapy kind of solidified that for me. But I've always tried to handle it more naturally because I had such an adverse reaction to, you know, the synthetic stuff. So, you know, I may need to be on a prescription one day, but right now I'm trying to combat things.
Yeah, exactly.
As naturally as possible. Other than that, writing. I can't believe I was about to leave that out. Writing for me daily is a form of self-care. And you had this in your session also, although it was somebody different. Meeting Sierra DeMulder, kind of, I'd known Tanya. Tanya was at yours, right?
Yep.
So I heard Tanya first with the spoken word poetry. It's never anything I thought I would be good at or cling to or anything like that. And it doesn't happen that doesn't happen daily either, but when it comes to me, man, it comes to me. And when I write it down, it's really, really powerful. But I journal, I doodle. There are things that I, you know, when I was in that 20s fog that I was telling you about, that I do bring back and unearth. I really loved art for like 15 years and then pushed it away while I was in that fog. So I will, you know, sketch. It's not anything I let anybody look at, but that doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
Like what you do for yourself is what you do for yourself. So I think that's about it. I read a lot too, but
at the same time, I mean, if you're going to the gym, you're like, hey, look at me, like I'm doing jumping jacks. It's like, no, like you're doing it to better yourself. And somebody doesn't have to be there to watch you do jumping jacks to have the benefit of it. So yeah, it's the same thing.
Yeah.
And I mean, similarly, where it's not surprising at all where you end up having, you know, louder music to maybe center you or music that moves you, because for some reason, like there's classical or instrumental or whatever is that kind of gets me antsy. Whereas if I want to center myself and calm down, it's got to be hard rock or heavy metal. I mean, there's most of, you know, vintage Metallica is going to like stop me in my tracks and I can be as focused as I can, as I need be, if that's the case there. So it is interesting. And I know science technically contradicts that, but that's not always, sometimes there is something that you got to do what works for you. So that's what I found for me to definitely be a center there.
You got to do your own research sometimes.
The only other thing you didn't mention that you've been doing recently, if you wanted to jump into, was Budokan.
Oh, yes. I almost said that before I let you take over again. So Budokan is a mixed movement art. Movement is the key phrase there. It's a combination of a martial arts, yoga, animal locomotion, which is exactly what it sounds like. Like this guy studied, the guy that developed it studied how animals move. And you might look at an animal move and think it's nothing special, but if you're really paying attention, it's very agile.
Mm-hmm.
It's very
measured.
It's pretty spectacular. Yeah, it's very, very spectacular. And you were talking about the gym. I hate it. I hate it with a passion. I have been trying to develop a fitness routine for 12 years. And it's not the gym, you know,
yep.
Can I get on the elliptical? Yes. Can I get on the treadmill? Yes. Can I lift weights? Yes. But I hate it.
Is it
and
something
I
that
think
inspires
forcing
me? Is it something that I'm going to, again, be bringing myself back into? Is it something where I'm just doing it to check a box or satisfy a need, whereas as opposed to something
and
to empower me?
That was the thing. That was another beneficial thing, like that you might not realize that you get from the therapy. Like, you have to discover or rediscover who you are. And just like you said, do what works for you. You know, like I was getting myself anxious to go work out. So guess who was defeating the purpose of the workout?
Yep.
Me. Okay. So Budokan, I had only seen it online, and over the summer, the guy that developed it was going to be in Charlotte, which is where, well, close to where I live. And I said, what? He's going to be in Charlotte, like, because he's from Miami. So I'm sitting here thinking I'm going to have to go to Miami one day to learn how to do this. Well, there is a, now, it's not the, what a, it's not a cage. Like, I'm trying to think of what they call it. It's not a dojo per se. I don't really know what they call the workout space. I'll have to figure out. They call it an academy, but I don't know what they call the actual space. But it's just a room full of mats and rings and parallel bars and uneven bars and punching bags. And then a separate room is yoga space. So the training is basically shoes off, no weights. It's using your body to create these movements. And the design is, you know, very martial arts based. So when you get into the MMA part of it and things like that, you're learning defensively. So it's never about, you know, the discipline is there, but it's always about a defensive discipline. It's not about, you know, teaching you how to go kick somebody's ass. Yes. It's like, you know, but if you find yourself in this situation, you can get out of it in a way and be able to move to get out of the way. But I went to, they had a special over the summer where you could come unlimited for 2 weeks. And I said, okay, I'm doing this. And one of the first things, which was huge for me was, you know, cause I'm, you know, bigger, and that's always been a sore subject for me when it comes to working out, is I automatically go in limiting myself.
Yeah.
Because, okay, you're overweight, so you're supposed to have difficulty doing some of these things. So when he would be demonstrating something, I'm already mentally checking out and deciding what I'm going to be able to do and what I'm not going to be able to do. And he would just go, oh, your body can do that. It's your mind telling you that your body cannot do it. So it took me probably about 15 minutes before my mind just said, okay, I'm going to shut up now. And it's probably the first time in a decade I ever felt like I could do something physically.
Yep.
Now I can, I've ran 5Ks. I can get out and kick the soccer ball. Like, you know, no matter what your size, unless you have a health issue, you can be relatively active. And I am, you know, have been relatively active, but this is what I need. I'm just the kind of person that has to connect with that, what I'm doing for exercise as well. And that's a modality that I can do where I can connect and feel. And when you get something and something connects and it involved taking your mind out of it, it's so powerful. So once you feel what that feels like, it's pretty, you know, again, it's powerful.
And moving back and into the animalistic nature and kind of getting back into the energy part of it. And again, having that all kind of come together and align there is something where, as you said, taking your mind out of it and just moving through and doing the animalistic movements, where if you look in nature, there's a reason why things move the way they do, and there's a lot of similarities and stuff there. So being able to just, again, stop overthinking and just move and feel it goes a long way.
It does. And they have to connect like every portion of their body to complete a task. You know, we, depending on what we do for a living or where we're at, can use one arm or a hand or whatever, but they have to, because what they're doing most of the time is for survival every minute of every day. It's just beautiful. Like you're literally watching these people demonstrate how to walk across the room like a lion. And I don't know if you've ever watched a lion move before, but all four limbs don't go at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's like a, you know, almost like a tank kind of when you slow it down. Or a crocodile or a gorilla, like you're watching these guys demonstrate this. And before long, you're checking out and you feel like you're watching the animal in the wild, and you go, oh, this is fascinating. This is beautiful. This is, if I could move like that, my back probably wouldn't hurt. Mm-hmm. Like, and I think that's why I did it ultimately, is because you mentioned our age earlier. it's young to some people and it's older to others, but I think you can agree we're feeling things that we didn't used to feel.
It takes a little bit longer to recover.
Yeah. So in my mind, I'm like, if I can, okay, so that's to bring it back home. I finally feel alive for the first time. And that's only been, that's a new feeling. And I want my body to feel that way. So that's why I like this particular, you've got to find what you can connect to physically too, that's not going to wreck you mentally and emotionally.
Yep. Makes sense.
and stressing yourself out about going to a place that you don't want to go and then paying a membership for 2 years that you never use. That's a good lesson to learn.
Yep. Absolutely. A lot of what, and we just covered it in some of the self-care discussion, but a lot of what you mentioned in Hard Camp and even in some of the opening, but community seems to be a pretty decent size portion of some of your intentionality. So how would you define community, or what does it mean to you?
Well, for the first time in my life since Hard Camp, community doesn't have to be people that are in an arm's distance. It's very symbolic to me now, and it's closer, like energetically, it's closer than it is physically. But without a doubt, like, and we might get emotional here, but without a doubt, it's the people that you can, they've got your back. And I know what it's like for people to have my back, and that doesn't mean they're right behind you, patting your back. Mm-hmm. You know, like I feel so connected to people that aren't even here and I don't even see all the time. But it definitely means a follow through with the words that you say. And it's not just words at the same time, if that makes any sense. Like it's so much more than words. And it's, I'm gonna say, like, community to me is that trampoline that firefighters put at the bottom of a window that's on fire. It's your safe place to land. It's the people that are going to stay and make sure you make it out of that building safely when everybody else goes and runs in the other direction or gets their cell phone out to make something go viral. Mm-hmm. It's the people in the video that put their phone down and help whatever situation's going on. Yeah.
Yeah. That aligns and kind of echoes, unsurprisingly, kind of Jenny's sentiment of it's the, you know, the people that you can call in the middle of the night and they know they're going to be there for you. And then some other similar folks with very similar responses where it is the place where you can come back to, you know, that, you know, it's not always something that you're going to need to, kind of like you've carried the weight for so long. Now other people can help you carry that. Mm. But then when you need to, you can help them carry it and things like that. So it is very similar to that, the notion that, and I love the kind of the way that you initially started out there, that it definitely doesn't have to be within arm's reach. As someone myself who has had very geographically dispersed communities between where I grew up, where I went to college, where I lived in North Carolina for a number of years, and then now in Chicago, and I mean the Hard Camp family being worldwide, and some of the closest connections I have there being, you know, with folks that are Australia, New Zealand. So that's a little bit of the other side of the world where it's, you know, 14, 15 hours ahead now. Mm-hmm. And so having that sense of community and that sense of tight knittedness really goes a long way there.
The only thing I was going to add to that was it dips back into the authenticity a little bit, because authenticity wasn't a word that I heard a lot before Hard Camp.
100%.
And agree. I have talked to, you have varying degrees of closeness, even within the Hard Camp family, but I have talked to so many that have gone, like, they have taught me what it means to be loved in your authenticity.
But yeah, that's awesome.
You know what I mean? Like you spend, or I had spent a lot of time thinking, well, if I just changed this a little bit, or if I just said this less,
or if I present this myself more, in this way. Or,
yeah. And to have, and I don't mean to, of course, I'm not discounting people that are closer to me and my all the time friends, but even with them, you know, it's like, okay, so if we take it back to your home team for a second and say, wow, like I thought I knew you and I thought I loved you, but now I really do, because this is how you came back and how you came home. And I have to throw this in real quick. And if you were going to ask about this later, I'm sorry, but my best friend has never said a word about any of my tattoos. And now I have 3, and 2 of them I got a month apart. One of them we share. And she took my arm the other day, and it's my heart camp tattoo. Mm-hmm. And she said, you know, I got to tell you that this is my favorite of your tattoos, because I can see the visible change that it made. And it made me love people better. Like, not because I learned, like I said a few minutes ago, about like, you don't have a cap on your capacity to care for people. Mm-hmm. You don't have a cap on your love either, and your capacity to love people. And to have a community that's both home and abroad is really, really, really special. And that's what my tattoo means. That's what my tattoo symbolizes to me, is that, you know, international, intergalactic. Thank you. Yeah, thanks.
So we will start to bring it on home then.
Okay, sounds good.
But we'll have 2 questions here. If there's one thing that someone can take away from your story, what would you want that to be?
My heartbeat is to let people know that they matter. No matter where they are, where they're at in life, they're worthy of life and they're worthy of love, and their home team might not be the best team for them, but there are people out there where they can find a home if they will just hang on and maybe let one person in on what's going on with them that might can help point them there. I don't even know if that conveyed in my story or not. Hope is my word. It's tattooed on my body somewhere. So if they take anything away from my story, it would be that hope is real, to echo another To Write Love on Our Arms motto, and rescue is possible, which is another one. So
bouncing off of the community conversation that we just have, where, you know, your home team may not be the best team for you. And I think we have now a lot of mutual friends, or even know of similar stories where, unfortunately, people get caught up in that and don't understand that and don't realize that there are other options, or, you know, that they have the ability to kind of start over with whatever team/community they need. And that doesn't always have to be their home team, as, and there are friends and family and loved ones that have amazing home teams. Like you said, not to discount folks who have tremendous home teams in addition to new communities and new teams that they're building, but just knowing that that is a possibility, and it may not be all you. It may just be, you know, you need to change a space type thing, and to have that conversation with someone if you kind of feel that that's not starting to feel right. So that goes a long way. Mm-hmm. Now for the probably, I have, this can go either one of 2 ways. It can be really easy, or it'll be something you're going to have to think on a lot. So What's one song that you'd want to share about your story? This can be a happy time story, a self-care song, something that literally tells your story or mirrors your story, whether you'd want it to sum up this conversation in the spirit of the episode, or just, you know, your song or something like that. What would that episode be? Or sorry, what would that song be?
I am going to throw it way back here, because we didn't even touch on one of the darker parts of my life, which is fine. But I was reminded by another heart camp friend how much I like Sister Hazel. And I have so many groups. You know, a lot of my musical taste right now, but their song Change Your Mind.
Excellent one.
Was like the song I kept coming to. They also have one called Thank You. And both of those, one of the song Thank You is like an homage to a difficult person in your life that showed you all the things that you didn't want to be in your life mm-hmm. anymore. And I have found it therapeutic for myself to be able to look at this person and go, you served a purpose. I don't like to admit it all the time. And there was a lot of pain and a lot of pain attached to that, but I'll never have a person like you in my life again because of you. So that was, I think it's on the same album, as a matter of fact, Fortress, if I'm not mistaken. But Change Your Mind, it goes back to, even though I didn't know it at the time, but the things that we were talking about earlier with the positive and the intention, it's like, you know, have you ever danced in the rain or thanked the sun just for shining? No, you don't have to go and do those things. But when it comes down to the simplicity of changing the script for your day, it's that simple. It's like, yeah, I stubbed my toe, but I felt it, or something. I don't know if you want to add both songs, but
well, the de facto answer that everybody, as soon as I ask the question, the de facto answer before they even start thinking is, can I have two? So it's not in any way, shape, or form out of the ordinary. So you're right there with everybody else.
I didn't expect it to be by the same person or even Sister Hazel, because you know how much I'm feeling Walk the Moon right now. But
that's who I figured it was going to be. But I'm happy. Sister Hazel is definitely a good one for me too.
I think that it encompasses what we're trying to do with this podcast more than Walk the Moon. Even though I listen to Walk the Moon every day, they're still telling stories with their music, which I love. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of deep references in the story, but they're still writing songs about other people and, you know, the pain and the dangers of love. And again, really great songs. And I could go on and on about how much I love them, because you already know that. If I had to go with my gut, that was the first song. You know, Change Your Mind was the first song that came to mind, because we have to realize how much power we have. And I think when we get in the doldrums, and I used the word doldrums the other day when I was writing a poem instead of a wave, because like mental health to me presents itself in, okay, I'm very unmotivated today, or I feel like claustrophobic because something's so on my mind, or I'm freaking out about, you know, can my neighbor hear me talking at 10:30 at yep. night? Am I keeping her awake? You know what I mean? Like,
absolutely. If
do I ever have a calm stream of consciousness? Probably not. So that I just call it navigating the doldrums instead of riding the wave. Cause if I'm honest, I'm always thinking about something.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense.
I'm never just numb brain. Yeah.
And that lines up actually, I mean, based on the conversation we've had, I mean, that lines up with the song that I'll add for my song for the episode. And that'll be the song off the Star Is Born soundtrack, which is Maybe It's Time. So it's the third song on the album or on the soundtrack without dialogue.
Sounds good.
But that's, for me, that's very much the same thing for your sentiment behind Change Your Mind and just kind of bringing that out and understanding kind of what we're taking it down to the most fundamental aspect and thinking, what are we doing here every day, as opposed to just kind of letting it consume us, but we can be intentional with that aspect. So that covers everything that I wanted to talk about. Was there anything else that was on your radar, anything you wanted to cover before we close it out?
I just want to echo everything that we talked about, specifically with Heart Camp. Because I don't even know that you realize your capacity to care about people. Because I don't want to say you get desensitized to the people that are closest to you, but I think you might.
No, I'd agree with that.
And I think, I know I did, you know, like I said, I do have a supportive home team, and going here and meeting strangers that are closer to me than some of my family deeply impacted my relationships at home and the relationships in a good way. And the relationships at home have never met these people, but are respectful of the connection and not jealous and not, you know what I mean? Like true love and true care. It's not jealous or prideful or any of these things. And it allows you to grow and it accepts you and holds you. And I know that not everybody can make it to Heart Camp because I don't think it has the capacity to hold everybody yet. I just want to encourage anybody that might not be a Heart Camper to just to try to put your ear to the ground and find people that are asking questions that you want to know the answer to, too. You know, if you want to talk about authenticity, if you want to figure out how to bring your heart to work. I mean, I think everybody on the planet could benefit with getting more in tune mm-hmm. to what really makes you passionate and what really connects you to your heart. Because I feel like that's what's going to change the world is for more people to connect. And maybe that doesn't mean a job change, but maybe it does. And you can figure that out the more you search your heart and find people that'll listen to your heart, because there are people out there that will.
Well, and similarly, it's the beauty and simplicity of it, where it's going back to, you know, another piece that To Write Love on Our Arms has used before. It's one of their more popular shirts, but it's the Noah Gunderson lyric, "I want to learn how to love, not just the feeling." And so that's that exact sentiment there, where it ends up, it goes a long way in just, you know, not being desensitized to the people around you, but then knowing that that feeling can extend beyond just your fingertips, just beyond your spouse or your partner, and what that means, and kind of different types of love, and the kind of the worldly aspect of it, and going back to love is the movement, back to the religious foundation of Jesus's love and all of that other stuff, where there's so many different like interconnectedness pieces of that, where again, just, you know, coming back to finding what's inside you first before you can go out and do everything else is kind of paramount.
Right. And if I could say one more thing, it's say it. Like, if you feel it, say it. It does not matter if it's reciprocated verbally. If you love somebody, then say it, text it. And that's been the most healing thing about Heart Camp for me. I had a friend a long time ago that said, "I'm just in love with her." And he was married mm-hmm. and was talking about another friend of his. And I'm going, "God, you are. Like, you are in love with your friends. It's not the same love that you have, like you just said, for your spouse, but or significant other." But I feel like it, as a single person for almost a decade, it's really important to hear it.
Yeah.
And it's really important for me to say it, because like, we all need it. And you and I obviously believe love is the most powerful force on the planet. That would be my last like piece of thing. You know, don't keep it to yourself, man. You're not going to change the world by keeping it to yourself. Like, it, again, you don't say it with expectation of hearing it back. Just say it.
Well, so, I mean, we've used
if you feel it,
a lot of taglines, a lot of idioms here, but I, if anybody is actually listening, and really listening, they'd have to believe that, you know, you're not just saying it, you're not just quoting it, but you are truly living it. So thank you for sharing. And this has been one of my favorite episodes so far.
Thank you. I've had a lot of fun too.
Thank you so very much for joining us this week. We hope you had as good a time listening as we had recording the interview. Don't forget to check out anthologiesofhope.com/playlist for all the awesome songs that will get added each week. You can find us on social media at Anthologies of Hope on Facebook and Instagram, and Anthologies Pod on Twitter. It would be great if you could subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or Google, and leave us a review. As always, remember, everyone has a story, and it's about time we start listening.